What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. A U.S. Navy ship fired three warning shots at armed Iranian patrol boats as they sped toward the American warship in the Strait of Hormuz Sunday. A U.S. defense spokesman Monday said the group of four fast attack boats operated by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard ignored multiple attempts to warn them away by the USS Mahan, including the use of flares, a siren, flashing lights, and a ship's whistle. Josh Earnest is a White House spokesman.
The actions were unsafe and unprofessional. These, of course, are the actions that were taken by the Iranian vessels. At this point, the United States does not know what the intentions of the Iranian vessel were, but the behavior is not acceptable, given that the USS Mahan was operating in international waters.
Another incident involving warning shots occurred in August after an Iranian fast attack craft approached two U.S. warships in similar fashion. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn, after meeting European lawmakers Monday, said his government will not release leading opposition figure Merara Gudina of the Oromo Federalist Congress Party, detained under the country's state of emergency.
He conspired with those armed struggling groups sitting down to change government unconstitutionally. So this will not be allowed wherever and by whatever means it comes.
Merara, one of thousands detained under Ethiopia's state of emergency declared last October, following widespread, sometimes violent, anti-government protests over a land development program. Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara has dismissed the heads of the army, police, and gendarme after a two-day military mutiny by soldiers demanding higher pay. They seized control of the second-largest city, Bouake, and the mutiny spread until negotiations ended it Sunday. This is VOA News. Turkey's parliament has begun debate on a proposed constitutional amendment package that would give President Recep Tayyip Erdogan sweeping executive powers. Critics warn if approved, the president, who has been in power for 14 years, could become a de facto dictator and move the country away from its democratic roots. Stephen Zunis is a regional analyst at the University of San Francisco.
These sound like legitimate concerns, but in many respects, Erdogan has been an authoritarian president for some time now.
The proposed amendments, which must be approved by parliament and set to a voter referendum, would, among other things, scrap the office of prime minister, allow the president to appoint the government, dissolve parliament, and declare states of emergency. The Obama administration is blacklisting five Russians, including a senior law enforcement official close to President Vladimir Putin. It follows tensions over allegations that Russia used cyber attacks to try to influence last year's U.S. election. John Kirby, a U.S. State Department spokesman, said the intelligence community reached consensus on that charge.
All our intelligence communities came to the same basic conclusion over and over again, that they testified publicly to those conclusions last week, and that they backed up that testimony in private briefings to some members of Congress, as well as to President Obama and President-elect Trump, I think should give people confidence in their assessments.
The latest sanctions have nothing to do with the intelligence report, but a 2012 law punishing human rights violators. Italy has reopened its embassy in Libya after 2 years because of militia violence and what Rome calls a show of support for the UN-backed National Unity Government in Tripoli.
Noi supportiamo e sosteniamo gli sforzi.
Italian Interior Minister Marco Minniti said he supports efforts to stabilize the country for the security of the Mediterranean and Libya. Italy has borne the brunt of the migrant crisis in an exodus flow to Europe through Libya. The appeal phase of former Chadian President Issen Abre's war crimes and crimes against humanity life sentence got underway in Dakar, Senegal, Monday. Abre, sentenced in May by the Extraordinary African Chambers to life behind bars for crimes committed while in office from 1982 to 1990. Venezuela's opposition-led National Assembly has approved a resolution declaring President Nicolas Maduro has abandoned his office by failing to stem the country's economic crisis, which has resulted in triple-digit inflation, food and medical shortages, long lines, and street violence. The dropping price of oil had a negative impact on U.S. stocks. Monday, the benchmark Dow Jones retreating from its advance toward 20,000 points, the Dow closing at 19887. President Barack Obama, who leaves office January 20th, will deliver his farewell address at 2 hours Universal Time Wednesday. VOA will carry his remarks live. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The presidents of Nigeria and Liberia travel to the Gambia tomorrow with yet another message for President Yahya Jammeh.
The decision was that the leaders stood by the constitution of Gambia, and anything that will advance the respect of the will of the people of Gambia, the leaders supported.
Femi Adesina is the special advisor on media and publicity to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. We'll get the latest on developments inside the Gambia. A South Sudan bishop deplores miserable and shameful condition for refugees in Uganda. We'll also talk about the situation of African migrants in Europe. And Bamenda City in Cameroon was a ghost city on Monday as residents honored the call to strike over the increasing use of French.
We maintain our disposition as civilized, learned men to dialogue. And dialogue doesn't mean you are giving up your position. You simply market your position to the understanding of the other side.
That's lawyer Boga Harmony, leader of striking English-speaking lawyers in Cameroon, and new guidelines to prevent peanut allergy in children. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari travels to the Gambia tomorrow, Wednesday, along with Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, current president of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. The trip comes on the heels of a meeting in Abuja Monday. Femi Adesina is special advisor on media and publicity to Nigerian President Buhari. He says the leaders are once again going to tell President Jammeh to respect the Gambian constitution and step down following his defeat in the December 1st election.
The meeting was hosted by President Muhammadu Buhari, and in attendance were the president of Liberia, was the chairperson of ECOWAS, then Macky Sall, president of Senegal, was also there, and the former immediate past president of Ghana, John Mahama, was there. The decision was that the leaders stood by the constitution of Gambia, and anything that will advance the respect of the will of the people of Gambia, the leaders supported. And so they resolved that on Wednesday, they will be in Banjul to meet with the president, Yahya Jammeh, so that he will respect the will of the people of his country and step down so that the president-elect Adama Barrow can be sworn in on January 9th.
Did the leaders take into consideration that the Gambian Supreme Court is supposed to be meeting?
Yes, all that has been factored in because, you know, the Supreme Court of Gambia will start the hearing, I think, is on the 10th. But that's just the beginning of the hearing. It's not as if it's delivering judgment immediately. So things have to run simultaneously. As the court processing goes on, the mediation process also go on. But the ultimate intention is that Yahya Jammeh would step down and Adama Barrow, president-elect, can be inaugurated as the constitution of Gambia demands.
I'm assuming that perhaps this is the last dish effort by the ECOWAS to get Jammeh to know, because some time ago there was consideration that ECOWAS might use military force. Is ECOWAS backing away from that?
No, I think all options are on the table, really. But then there's still time for persuasion, which is what is happening.
I talked on Sunday with the Gambian deputy ambassador saying that what ECOWAS is doing is in violation of ECOWAS's own constitution or bylaws, that is interfering in Gambia's internal affairs.
This is not interfering. This is rather mediating and peacemaking, because it's a potential what you have on ground. It's like sitting on gunpowder, on a keg of gunpowder that can explode at any time, and innocent people will be affected. So it's better to work for peace and work for amity by talking to President Jammeh, and that is what ECOWAS is doing.
Femi Adesina is the special advisor on media and publicity to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. You are speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Today, Tuesday, is the day that the Gambian Supreme Court is supposed to begin hearing President Yahya Jammeh's challenge to the results of the December 1st presidential election. Jammeh wants new elections because he says the results were rigged in favor of opposition leader Adama Barrow. This comes as the United States has warned U.S. citizens to avoid travel to the Gambia. Also, Mr. Jammeh has shut down yet another private radio station. And in yet another development, Gambia's Information Minister Sherif Bojan has reportedly fled the country to Senegal. On the line from Senegal's capital, Dakar, is VOA stringer Sydney Marina. Good morning, Sydney.
Good morning, James.
Let's begin first with the Supreme Court. Today is the day that we know the court is supposed to meet. Is that still on track?
Yes, today the Supreme Court, headed by Nigerian-born Chief Justice Emmanuel Fadbele, will hear the petition filed by President Jammeh challenging the December 1st presidential election in which he lost to coalition leader Adama Barrow. Today, there was a case at the Supreme Court, and people realized that the judges that are supposed to come from Nigeria and Sierra Leone have not yet arrived in the country. But the petition is expected to be here today at the Supreme Court of the Gambia.
We hear that some more Gambian government officials are defecting. What's the latest on that?
Yes, the Minister for Information and Communication, Sherif Bojan, who used to be President Jammeh's spokesperson, defected today and released a statement late Monday evening. And the statement is endorsing President-elect Adama Barrow as the sole president of the Gambia. The minister said his decision to resign was out of desire for the president, Yahya Jammeh, to respect the express will of the Gambians who voted him out of the office on 1st December presidential election. As we speak, he is currently in Dakar here. Today, the state broadcaster announced that the minister has been fired and replaced by an MP.
We know that the U.S. State Department has issued travel warning to U.S. citizens in the Gambia, warning people to avoid traveling to Gambia. What's the situation on the ground there now?
The U.S. ambassador on Friday held a briefing for U.S. citizens, including Gambians who are naturalized U.S. citizens, warning them to leave the Gambia as soon as possible because of the political situation is showing no sign of abating. The embassy, in a statement, said the operation and the embassy will be winding down to 8 personnel because they foresee a situation where violence can break out. So they advised the U.S. citizens, including government officials working for the United States, to leave. Currently, some of them have left Banjul and they are currently in Dakar. Even I got information that, you know, the World Bank, which is under the United Nations, has also evacuated some of its non-essential staff to Dakar.
We hear again that the government has closed down another radio station.
Yes, I can also confirm that the government, through the Ministry of Communication, has shut down Paradise FM, bringing it to the total of 4 private radio stations that have been shut down within a space of 2 weeks. This radio station hosted a political show on Sunday between the coalition spokesperson and the chief propagandist of the outgoing President Yahya Jammeh, where they were engaged into a bitter debate. 2 hours after the show, men believed to be members of the National Intelligence Agency stormed the offices of Paradise FM, you know, and ordered the management to ease operation until further notice.
Senator, thank you very much again for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, James. It's my pleasure.
That's VOA stringer Sydney Marina speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 10th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send shout out to listeners on our VOA affiliate stations, Brela FM in Nigeria, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, and Rush FM in Bamenda, Cameroon, as well as Radio Hot Cocoa, also in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Streets were empty Monday in the Cameroonian city of Bamenda as residents honor a call to strike over the increasing use of French and English speaking parts of the country. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, tension between English and French speakers is running high.
A client and an attorney argue outside a courthouse in Bamenda as bystanders listen in. The client, Ashu Georgette, wants her lawyer to defend her in court after she was accused of illegally occupying a piece of land she inherited from her father. But the attorney refuses, citing the ongoing strike by Cameroon's English-speaking lawyers. Georgette is not happy.
As we speak now, somebody is constructing on the land, and I don't have any power to stop him. I've been waiting for the court to render justice, but my lawyer doesn't come.
Lawyers in the English-speaking southwest and northwest regions of Cameroon called the strike in September to protest what they called the overbearing use of the French language. English speakers constitute 20% of Cameroon's population, and the Constitution says English and French inherited from colonial times are equally important. But most official documents are only in French, and judges, administrators, and teachers with little understanding of English are often sent to work in English-speaking regions. The lawyers have been joined by teachers and supported by young people. Protests in November led to clashes with the military that left several people dead, hundreds missing or wounded, and scores under arrest. The government opened up negotiations, but the striking teachers and lawyers stormed out. The leader of the striking lawyers, Bobga Harmony, says they will resume talks once authorities release youths who were arrested for burning police stations, vehicles, and Cameroon's national flag during the protests.
We maintain our disposition as civilized, learned men to dialogue. And dialogue doesn't mean you are giving up your position. You simply market your position to the understanding of the other side. And any reasonable other side who seeks peace will buy it rather than accuse infants of terrorism in a situation where that word has no place.
Harmony says the whereabouts of some of the arrested protesters is not known. Rights activists like Joseph Chongsi of the Center for Human Rights and Peace Advocacy have called on officials to reveal where the protesters are being held.
Cameroon government should without delay set up an independent and impartial investigation commission, ensure thorough, prompt, effective and impartial investigation of all suspected cases of death, especially those in custody.
In an address on December 31, President Paul Biya said he was open to talks with the protesters, but warned he will never accept any attempt to destabilize what he called Cameroon's hard-earned national unity. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The Catholic Archbishop of Juba, South Sudan, has described as miserable and shameful the condition of South Sudanese refugees in Uganda's Adjumani district. Archbishop Paulino Lukudo Loro is calling on South Sudan's leaders to visit the camps and see for themselves how the conflict is affecting their fellow South Sudanese who are forced by violence to flee their homes. Tito Justin reports from Juba.
Archbishop Lukudu and Bishop Emeritus Paride Taban, a retired bishop from the Catholic Diocese of Toriti, returned to South Sudan last week after visiting Pagrinya Camp in northern Uganda. The camp hosts about 30,000 South Sudanese who sought refuge after renewed fighting broke out in Juba last July. Archbishop Lukudu says South Sudanese leaders should see for themselves how refugees are living in neighboring countries.
Our government in the country does not seem to be aware of what really is going on about the consequences of our situation inside. The consequences of what we are calling now as war in South Sudan. What consequences are these problems of our South Sudan producing on the people?
Archbishop Lukudu says he returned last week to the capital via Yei River State's Greater Kajokeji and saw that most South Sudanese are too afraid to return home because of the ongoing conflict.
You can see the life of the people is good. They are okay, but the deep sense of peaceful living is not there. The people are not sincerely, honestly, and deeply happy because we are still hearing that there are here and there, I think, some killings. And I think this we must be very honest to ourselves. There are still killings going on, individuals and whatever it is, robbing, especially robbing of properties. And in that case, I think robbing, they kill people.
Archbishop Lukudu is calling on the country's leaders to visit displaced citizens inside the country as well as refugee camps sheltering South Sudanese refugees in northern Uganda and in other neighboring countries.
Let us begin now to see really what is going on, what consequences of our difficult situation, of our insecurity. What are the consequences? What are really the precautions of this? I think this is what I would advise, be it to the leadership of our country as well as the leadership of the church. We need to make visits, official visits, to these places, see and learn and come and do something about it.
South Sudanese Information Minister Michael Makwe says he has not heard about the Archbishop's visit to the Ugandan refugee camp and cannot comment. Archbishop Lukudu says the warring parties of South Sudan should understand that they are responsible for all the suffering of South Sudanese in and out of the country.
We have to be serious now about peace. By all means, as the church is always in advocating and calling for, stop violence, stop killing, stop guns, and whatever is to become and to be done is this dialogue, this peace talking.
Archbishop Lukudu says church leaders are mobilizing to visit the displaced and South Sudanese refugees in neighboring countries. He says they are also standby to help in the process of national reconciliation and dialogue. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
The numbers are in, and around 180,000 migrants arrived in Italy by sea in 2016, an 18% jump from the year before. These statistics come on the heels of a decision by Italy's new government to build more detention centers for migrants who are said to be deported. Mustafa Tala is a cultural mediator for the International Organization for Migration, who grew up in Senegal and now works in Italy. He says deterrents in Europe are bound to fail as long as there are few economic opportunities in the African countries where many of these migrants are living from, Senegal and Mali.
The government, Italian government, the new government, I think want to stop it. It doesn't work because it's not easy to deport people. Because before deporting people, they need to identify people. And if you want to identify people and give the right to them to apply for a protection permit, they need almost 2 years. Because in Italy, it works in this way. People come here with boat. They ask firstly protection. Take time about now 2 years now. That's why the government of Italy say that now they want to create a new center of detention in each region in Italy. It will be about 15. Now we have only 3 working.
Do you think it's even possible for these changes to happen, given the fact that they want to more than triple the number of detention centers? This will cost a lot of money and take a lot of time.
No, I don't think so. I live in Senegal when I have 18. And all our groups, our people, our students, my friends, people, the only hope they have and the dream they have is leaving Senegal. Why? Because we don't have... Firstly, we are teenagers. We need to discover other thing, another way of life. Because we are living in a country where the culture is... a barrier. It's like something we cannot jump up. We need before, because young people need to go to discover another thing, firstly. Secondly, they don't have opportunity in the country.
Do you think if the framework was there, these people could start a business in Senegal or their home country with the money that they have used to make the journey to Italy, which is often a few thousand dollars? Should there be more efforts by Senegalese governments, Malian governments, to encourage this kind of growth?
People receive this money because the family know that this person have a project to move and go in another country. They have a lot of money. They know that these people, this person is young, is have the courage, and have the is strong to support this journey. But that's different because they know if once the person arrive in Europe, in 1 year he can't give back all the money. But if a young people ask money to work in Senegal, the family never give him because the family didn't believe in the institution of Senegal.
That was Mustafa Tala, cultural mediator with the International Organization for Migration, who was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Palermo, Italy. Peanuts and the food products made from them, such as peanut butter, oil, or flour, are widely used in the United States and elsewhere for their nutritional value and affordable prices. Unfortunately, many people are allergic to peanuts and can have reactions ranging from a mild skin rash or watery eyes to severe allergies that can cause death. Parents have been advised not to feed peanut products to children under 3 years of age. But new guidelines sponsored by the National Institutes of Health suggest that children should be exposed to peanuts at an earlier age to prevent the development of allergies. Viewers Latika Hogue got more details from Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, in an interview via Skype.
Peanuts are among the most popular snacks, and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich is a typical school lunch item for American kids. But about 2% of U.S. school children are allergic to peanuts, and the numbers are growing. So far, pediatricians have advised against introducing peanut-containing foods to kids under the age of 3. But a study conducted in 2015 in Britain showed that waiting too long most likely contributed to the problem.
It was observed that in Israel, where they have a custom of feeding peanut-based food to babies, infants, within the first few months of life, that when you, in fact, compare the incidence of peanut allergy among the Israeli children compared to comparable Jewish children living in England, the incidence of peanut allergy was more than 80% decreased among the Israeli kids as opposed to the kids who were living in England.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, says this striking finding means that babies have a mechanism in their bodies that can be trained not to respond negatively to peanuts. That mechanism may switch off as the baby reaches the age of 1. He said a panel of experts agreed on a new set of guidelines for U.S. pediatricians specializing in children's allergies.
If the child has a history of severe eczema or egg allergy, that in the first 4 to 6 months of life, that you should bring the child to an allergist specialist who can do a skin test or a blood test to determine if the child does have an underlying allergy to peanuts. Because if they do, you're going to want to refrain from challenging that child. Whereas if they don't, then it would be safe to challenge the child and feed them peanuts at 4 to 6 months.
If the child has moderate eczema and has a mild allergy to eggs, the pediatrician is likely to recommend that it be fed peanut-containing foods at the age of 6 months. That infant may need no allergy tests either. Children who have no allergies or family history of allergies can be introduced to peanuts at any age. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
And that's it for this Tuesday, January 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good day.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront, Wednesdays at 1730 UTC,
right here on VOA Africa. Africa.